I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julia McKenzie.
Part of the game.
CJ, I have a lot of different things I want to, you know, get to on this Thursday edition of our show, but I can't start anything until we talk about the shirt that you're wearing. And for people who are listening and not watching on YouTube, Chris Johnston decided he literally woke up and chose violence and wore his juggernaut shirt. It literally says juggernaut on the front. Why would you do this? You are going to panic an entire fan base in the market that you're in. Never mind that when you said it about the Canadians, they ended up going to the final. You
said it. Who said what market this is aimed at?
Oh, okay. Who was that intentional for somebody? I don't know.
I'm just saying it's an interpretive dance. It's art. It's art as you choose to see it. Okay. I'm not going to tell you what it means. I'm not going to tell you who it's aimed at. I don't even say this word anymore because it literally turned my social media feeds upside down for like six straight months. Like, I mean, like consecutively. One tweet about the Montreal Canadiens, I believe, was it February last year?
Yeah, something like that. Last season, because remember, this is all the same calendar year.
It's time is a flat circle, my man. But I will say that it's an interpretive art for today's pod. I want to channel this energy.
Do we title the episode after this name, or do we name it something else?
You're mostly responsible for the titles and you're doing a great job. So whatever.
Thank you.
Let's record this and just wherever the energy takes you, then, you know, I'm fine slapping the J word on this, but I'm not saying the J word.
Okay. All right, fine. That's very fair. One other thing I just want to mention before we get to all the actual stuff we want to get to, speaking of the team you may or may not have aimed at with that, but I also want to just briefly mention Austin Matthews getting a hat trick after Movember ended, shaving off the mustache and the Leafs disposing of the Avalanche. So we already mentioned earlier this week, hey, maybe the Leafs are good, but they beat a team that, I mean, they're a Stanley Cup pick for a lot of people. Like, I wonder what that means in the grand scheme of things when it comes to rating the Toronto Maple Leafs as contenders.
Well, they're definitely contenders. You know, like, I'm not sure that can be refuted. At the same time, it's December 2nd, so nothing's been won yet. Nothing is decided. There will be teams that rise and fall in these next few months. And obviously the Leafs have one way to go with how they've played the last month in particular. I mean, it was the best calendar month in their 100-year history, November, in terms of number of wins. They're feeling it. I think what's notable to me, Julian, is if you look at the games they've played against Tampa, against Boston, Colorado, Vegas, they're not winning 2-1. I mean, they've had some pretty strong outings against the other sort of perceived top teams or favorite teams. Now, some of those teams have dealt with a little bit more maybe than the Leafs have adversity-wise, injury-wise, COVID-wise, all those things. As I say, nothing's decided today, but it's based on what we have in front of us, what we can rule on. It would be insane for anyone to sit here and say they're not contenders. And I don't think the last 5 years of playoff whatever is all that relevant when you're just looking at the league right now. I think this is a funny league this year. Like, there's actually a little bit less parity, I would say, than we've seen in previous seasons. Like, there's more abjectly bad teams, and there's a few really, really good teams like the Leafs in terms of winning percentage or points percentage. And they're right among the top teams there with Carolina, Florida. I think Washington's up there. I don't have the standings in front of me, but they're feeling it. I was in the building for the game against Avalanche on Wednesday, and it was something. Like, you can see, finally, like, this cold, this fan base is Steve Dangle, right?
Yeah.
Like, Steve represents like a huge chunk of what this fan base, the way it sort of lives and experiences the team. And even when, like, say when they had won 12 of 14, I still felt like a hesitancy. And I don't know why the tipping point has come now at winning 15 of 17. You know, maybe seeing Matthews get that hat trick, Jack Campbell gets a monthly award, you know, I think second star of the month in November. I think people are finally like letting their guards down a little bit and enjoying it and going like, hey, wait a minute. I'm falling back into the hole. And I bet, I haven't talked to Steve since the Colorado game, but I bet he's falling back into the hole too.
And it's not just any team, right? I mean, it's the Colorado Avalanche, which just got Nathan MacKinnon back, and Nazem Kadri and all those other pieces are there too. Like, that's a really legit team they beat.
And they came back from the West Coast. Like, they played, the Leafs played in California, didn't land back until late Monday night, like 6 o'clock or something, you know, practice Tuesday, play Wednesday. That's the kind of game most teams, just the way your body clock works. You don't have your energy. You know, it's harder to get up for that game after a trip. You know, they won all three games in California too. So it was a game they could afford to lose, if you know what I'm saying, mentally. Like, if there's, I think that was a real statement to themselves. And I don't necessarily mean the league or anything like that, but just that they sort of maybe fought through the conditions of the schedule, which every team faces. But that could have easily been a schedule loss. I don't think Colorado had played for 4 days or something. So there's a lot of hype up. You know, obviously MacKinnon missing the time he did. I mean, no player jumps back in and is a superstar right away. I mean, he wasn't fully on, but still, I think the fact that the Leafs summoned that kind of game meant something. And, you know, Austin Matthews, you mentioned him at the top there. Like, what's been interesting with this year, he's certainly not been bad. It's up to, what, 12, 13 goals in like 21 games. So most people would love to struggle that way, but he's not been up to what he has been in the past. And I think that, you know, seeing him come into form now with 5 goals his last 4 games, like, you just get the feel like they were winning all those games even without some of their top performers having crazy stretches. And so then you add a crazy stretch in there, and this could end up being a crazy stretch for the team. So I think a lot of optimism around the Leafs, and I think it's justified, because you can only, all you can do is win the games in front of you today, and they're winning all those games.
That's what it's looking like. Still a lot of racetrack to be run, obviously, in the regular season as it is. Are they, in fact, a juggernaut? It remains to be seen when it really comes time for the postseason, because we expect the Toronto Maple Leafs to get there. But, I mean, hey, you know what? Enjoy it as it is in the regular season, man. It's okay to enjoy it.
It's funny because I do a lot of Toronto radio here, right, for TSN 1050.
Yes, of course.
And, you know, I was on with Carlo Koliakvo and Aaron Korolnik in the morning on Tuesday, and, you know, they're saying, like, what's your message to Leaf fans? I'm like, well, first of all, I can't tell a fan what to think. Really, yeah. Like, anyone who's investing their own money and time into this, like, they can think whatever they want. They can be crazy. Like, I'm not going to tell you not to, you know, it's not my place. But I do think if there was just, you know, the enjoying the journey thing doesn't steer you wrong in anything you do, any endeavor you tackle. And I think Leafs fans should think that way too, because there was a lot of years, and just the years right before this team, where they were kind of lost and, you know, they weren't ever really bad. Like, they only tanked 1 year essentially where they were last in the league, but they were, you knew they weren't winning with the team they had, and they were just kind of, they didn't have a plan. Right. And those were frustrating years, I think, for fans. Now it's a different level of frustration, but like, they're averaging over 100-point seasons for like 6 straight years. I know we haven't played full seasons because of pandemic, but if you look at their win percentage going back to like 2016-17, like, they're over 100-point team that whole time. I mean, you should enjoy that, because there will be another side of this at some point. We're not at this stage yet where we have to get into this, but all these players won't play here forever, or their age, or they'll have injuries, you know, just life will do its thing. So enjoy it while you got it. Get nervous for the playoffs when they come, but that's still a long way away. And this looks like a real track meet kind of team in the meantime.
One future segment idea that just popped into my head, and I don't know when we'll do it. CJ's inspirational quotes, because I feel like you dropped at least 2 or 3 in your answer about the Leafs. I want to transition over to talk about the Olympics. And I know we try hard. I mean, not try hard, but we know how discussing COVID could kind of make us feel on the show. It is a very important topic to discuss, but we understand that it's not necessarily the most pleasant thing to discuss. But I have to bring it up with regards to the Olympics. I have flip-flopped on what I thought if the Olympics were even going to happen, and now I think I am firmly in the camp that says they really should not happen. And this comes after the NHL sends out that memo to teams saying that, telling them to cancel all these different team events they've got planned, especially for the holidays. The day we're recording, the New York Islanders are supposed to make their return back from all those games being postponed due to COVID. Tyler Bertuzzi of the Detroit Red Wings, who infamously went unvaccinated to start off the year, is now in COVID
play games
protocol.
In Canada.
Yeah, that too, on top of that. On December 2nd, 2021, I believe, what, like maybe a month out from the opt-out date? You could tell me if I'm wrong on that. Where do you stand on the Olympics being a thing? And what might have you heard about, you know, players feeling comfortable going to the Olympics, or the league stance on this? Like, right now, December 2nd, what are you thinking about the Olympics?
What's interesting about the way you frame this, Julian, is a lot of my conversations I'm having with people in hockey go to this topic right now. I mean, because it is pretty clear. And, you know, if there is a world where there is the Olympics, we're talking about Olympic teams being named in like 6 weeks. Like, it's not that far off. So it's becoming into view. But so many people inside the sport, I'm talking agents, people work for teams, don't want to out anyone else, but just people, key people around hockey are saying what you're saying. Like, they're getting to a point where they're like, I don't know if this makes sense. Like, I think most people want this. You know, I get the NHL owners might not, but I think fans like it. It's clear the players really want to go. You know, it's not a case of that. This isn't, but I get the sense that everyone's looking at what's going on in the world, and you can't ignore the rising COVID numbers. There's a new variant. You know, the league itself, like, we've had two teams, Islanders and the Senators, shut down in November, but there's a lot of players and coaches and people, you know, staff for teams that are in COVID protocol. You know, those teams haven't been shut down, but this is touching almost every team in the league to some degree. And, you know, I think there's real concern about what the winter is going to look like. Like, I try to be an optimistic person. Like, that's how I feel by nature, but it's hard to ignore the fact that people are going to spend time just everywhere with their families at the holidays, as they should. It gets colder, so we're inside more. Like, I just think the conditions for transmission are high. And it seems that we're seeing, you know, especially in Europe right now, the numbers are really climbing. And what have we learned in the last 2 years? Like, everything affects everything else. The world is so interconnected now. Like, what's happening in Switzerland today is going to happen in Canada tomorrow or what have you. And so I think that there's real skepticism that they're going to be able to pull this off, which isn't to say the decision's made or that anyone knows for sure. You know, really what's going to happen, like, we're going to keep talking about this, of course, as we should, but I think they're just going to take it till January 9th or 10th when they have to make that call and see where everything's at and see and make a call, like, make a decision. Like, I don't know that you can make the decision today. The only way you could make it is if five teams were shut down and you just knew for sure you weren't going to get the schedule in. But that's not the case. And, you know, I'm very skeptical, and I have to say, I'm not the only one. And I'm talking prominent people that want to see this happen, but just feel like it's not going to be possible. And so I really hope I'm wrong. I love best on best hockey. I want to even talk to you about, like, who's going to make Team Canada and all that stuff, but you have to sort of do it in this parallel universe, because we can't ignore what's in front of us. And I sense, like, real legitimate skepticism, even going back to August, but it's picking up steam right now. And, you know, it might just not be possible. Look, for the last 2 years, I've wanted to see my friends or see my family or go to this restaurant or this bar or whatever. And we haven't been able to do a lot of that. We went to a lot of games with no fans, right? I never want to be in an NHL game without fans again. But we might have to, honestly. Like, I hope it doesn't get to that point, but I could certainly see in Canada, with just sort of where the modeling's at, we'll see how everything works out, that they might have to reduce capacity in arenas again. Like, we're not through this thing, unfortunately. And so, you know, we're not even getting into the political stuff in China as part of this discussion. And that's not that I'm leaving that aside. I think what really threatens from the NHL side of things is just the health situation, COVID, all that. But there is political discussion there too. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it'll be a miracle, in my opinion, if they can pull this off. But I hope they do. I'm actually cheering for that. I want to see a tournament. I don't care who wins. I just want to see all the best players playing against each other. I want to see, you know, Sidney Crosby playing left wing on Connor McDavid's, you know, left side there. I want to see how that looks. I want to see Austin Matthews and the U.S. team, you know, what looks like they could win gold. I want to see Victor Hedman, finally represent his country after missing out in Sochi and then becoming the best defenseman in the world for a period of time. Anyway, I want to see it all, but I have my doubts that it's going to happen.
Two things. One, the notification sound you just heard is not the 30-minute bell. Two, it is totally fine to, you know, show apprehension over the idea of NHL players going out to Beijing for the Olympics due to the COVID cases. It's fine to do that and also want the idea that, hey, I want to see this tournament happen. I want to see best on best against each other, men and women, particularly when it comes to hockey at the Olympics. It's totally fine. I don't know if you want to live in that parallel universe for a little bit, but like just the idea that we could still have the Olympics and Team Canada, obviously, there's still so much talk about who could be on the team and whatnot. And Andrew Mangiapane's name that likes to be thrown around as a dark horse and all that. But yeah, I'm really still pretty curious about what that team is going to look like, who's going to be there. I have no clue. I mean, not to say I have no clue, but there's some obvious names there. But it is fun to put together those rosters. And I'm curious with like a month out from the opt-out date and however long until we get those rosters out, like what some of the, what Bill Armstrong and some of those other GMs are thinking right now.
Well, I think they're knocking names off the list kind of unofficially. I mean, obviously those players could still be allowed to get there. There could be injuries, like things could happen. Like no one's out. But I think what they're doing is they're narrowing the pool to reach a consensus of where they need to be. And you know, it sounds like they're maybe down to like five forward spots or four forward spots that are still up for grabs. You know, which isn't crazy. Like if we could, I think we could both name the first six forwards on the team where there's really no debate about, and that's been the case since last August or, you know, 2 years ago. You know, but what's interesting is like, I think Zach Hyman has a real shot to make this team.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I don't know if you've noticed his play of late, like he scored a goal in Vegas a couple of days ago where he like fights off Mark Stone, who's like the ultimate puck hound. You know, I think that's where a lot of the discussion is right now is, okay, we know the star players that are going to play, like that. We know the guys that are going to be expected to score on this team, but I think that they're still carving out some of the roles for, you know, the bottom of the roster. And you know, the bottom of Team Canada's roster is a first liner on any NHL team. But yeah, I think that like, you know, when you're looking at guys like a Ryan O'Reilly, Zach Hyman, maybe Mark Scheifele, I think even Tom Wilson's in the mix. You know, I don't know to what degree, but like, I think they're looking.
Really?
He's definitely under consideration. I just, it's hard to, you know, look at that. No one's coming out and saying this is exactly how as it is, but I'm basically piecing together different conversations, different understandings of how they view players. And, you know, I do think that they're looking at how they want that sort of fourth line-ish to look slash maybe even, you know, you can bring 14 forwards to this tournament. You know, just basically what roles do people fill? Who's going to win a big faceoff for you in the defensive zone in a tight game? Who's going to kill a penalty for you? I mean, for Team Canada, they're a bit fortunate because Brad Marchand is an excellent penalty killer, as is Patrice Bergeron, but they're also, you know, obviously very effective, you know, offensive players. But beyond them, you know, the top players on this roster, whether it's a McKinnon, a Marner, a Crosby, you know, these guys aren't killing penalties, basically. I mean, Marner does in Toronto, but I don't think Team Canada necessarily wants that. Doesn't mean they wouldn't use that, but they're looking for role players. And so, and again, superstar role players. And so I think that's where the discussion is. And Hyman, to get back to complete that earlier thought, is I just think he's surging right now. The focus of the management group is on a small collection of forwards, of which I know he's a part of. And look, there's still going to be 5 weeks or so till that decision is finalized. So, you know, there's time. He's got to keep it up. But I think he's very much put himself in the conversation, not even just because he plays with Connor McDavid a fair bit, but, you know, the way he's kind of grown his game. And I wouldn't have guessed that. I would say if like we had this discussion December 2nd, 2020, and you're like, hey, look at the 2022 Olympic team, I wouldn't have been saying Zach Hyman. But the closer it gets, the more real or more possible that seems.
I feel like that kind of answers the follow-up question I had where, and maybe it would have been a little different, maybe he would have made changes if he stayed with the Leafs, but I wonder how much more consideration or how much less consideration Zach Hyman would have gotten if he stayed in Toronto and continued in the role he was in.
Great question. I mean, he was getting respect in that role too, right? I mean, he always played, his whole career actually, he's played with Toronto's top players. Like he was never a third or fourth liner with the Leafs.
Right.
From the minute he entered the league. Now he entered the league when they were a young team and all that stuff, but you know, he's been an effective player, but he's added a lot to his game. And I think maybe the fact it's been transported somewhere else, you know, and don't rule out the fact that now you're seeing him with Connor McDavid, who's obviously going to be an important part of the team. I think all those things help him. The fact, I guess, that he made that move and has adapted so well, been productive, you know, sometimes a change like that takes some time. And I don't sense, you know, I haven't talked to Zach, but I don't sense it's been that big of an adjustment for him. Like he's really, it's been a good fit. You know, I think he's been in a good mental headspace about it. I did sit down with him before the season in September. And, you know, I think it's hard to leave your hometown too, right? It's not just like he left the only team he's played for. Like he grew up in Toronto. His family lives here. His wife's family lives here. They, you know, they have a young son. You know, there's a real support system for him in Toronto. And so leaving that was an extra layer in addition to the team he grew up cheering for. But I think he understood that he had a real opportunity. I mean, like, as good as the top players are in Toronto, the guys we've touched on this, like the guys playing in Edmonton legitimately are the probably best two players in the world right now. And so, yeah, he doesn't play on McDavid's wing every shift or every night, but he's getting power play time with those players. He's getting a chance maybe to spread his wings, maybe to be seen as something different too, right? Like he was, I think, a fifth round pick by Florida, traded to the Leafs, like, you know, played in the AHL, had to sort of like climb his way up the hard way. And was always seen as like the paint by numbers guy with the artists, right? Like he was playing with Matthews and Marner, like these guys with clear offensive gifts. And he was sort of seen as like, you go win that puck battle and get your nose dirty and get down the puck and, you know, get off the ice. And, but I think, you know, when he's recruited as a free agent to come there to be a difference maker, like he's seen differently. And I think he sees himself differently. I think he recognized the opportunity there. And so it's an unknowable question that you've asked, but I think it's the smart one because there is a world, I think, where had he just stayed in Toronto, done what he always did, maybe wouldn't get the same attention. But now, you know, even Ken Holland, the GM who recruited him, who is now his GM, is part of the management team for Team Canada. So, you know, I think all those things, I'm not saying that Ken Holland's the one going to put him on the team, but he's just getting seen. More people are getting to know him too, right? Like that's part of it. And anyway, you heard it here first or close to first. I will not be surprised if he's named that team.
The last Olympics note I want to mention before we move on from the Olympics. You retweeted a story earlier this week from a Swedish outlet about Team Sweden and Lucas Raymond. Seems as if they're trying to ask the IIHF for an exemption to have Lucas Raymond on their long list because he previously wasn't there before. And we all know Lucas Raymond probably looking like the front runner for the Calder Trophy right now. I was wondering if you had any more insight on that story or more context to add.
Yeah, I mean, a really unfortunate spot for Lucas Raymond and for Team Sweden. You know, they didn't put him on the long list and now they're screwed, I think. I mean, to sum it up, I can't see a world. Look, they've asked the IIHF to review and allow him on. But, you know, the reason the long list exists, it's not to punish anyone. Like literally everybody who's on that long list has to do a different set of doping testing because there's different doping rules. And I don't know the exact list of illegal drugs, but there's different doping rules in the IOC and the NHL. And so, you know, essentially anyone on those long lists submitted to extra doping controls. They've had to fill out paperwork, send in their passport. Like you're literally registering for an event, right? And so, you know, that went in October and he wasn't included. And now he's maybe the best Swedish forward in the league, certainly top five. Like, I don't think there's any debate. Like Nylander, as we're recording this, probably has a couple more points in him. But I mean, Lucas Raymond's been tremendous and they made a mistake and they're trying to get out of it. They're trying to find a way around it. But if the IIHF allows that to happen, like what was the point of a long list to begin with? Every team can say like, oh, we missed this guy or that guy. You know, I'm pretty sure Troy Terry might've been left off the US team list.
Ooh,
if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on that.
Fine.
I think I heard that somewhere. But my point is I'm sure other teams have left the player off. They'd like to think twice about no one as prominent as how good Lucas Raymond has been that I'm aware of. But I don't see how Team Sweden gets out of this. And what's unfortunate, you know, as much as I'm making some light of it is, you know, this is a kid that should be at the Olympics. And if there's an Olympics, then I highly doubt he'll be able to be there.
Why not just expand the pool of not pool, but the long list, make it 100 players, make it as large as you can. So that way, you know, you can put every possible player. And even that, like you could probably still have someone just come out of nowhere and make that happen. But at least with 100 players going through doping and all that extra stuff, you lessen the chance of missing out on a guy like Lucas Raymond. You could put it like, for example, say they do this in like 2024. Canada could put a guy like Connor Bedard or Shane Wright on that list and be like, hey, you know what? Maybe they go through a crazy rookie or sophomore year, and that's enough to consider them. I know typically they might not necessarily give that credence to young players to have them on the team as early as they early in their careers, but you never know, right?
Well, I think my understanding is players don't want their time wasted either, right?
That
and
too.
So if you're the 100th person on the list, you feel like you're not going to make the team. And so I think, do you really want to go through the whole process if you don't really believe you're in the mix? And so I think that that's really where the numbers come in. There's probably just a logistical aspect to it. Getting doping tests from 300 people is easier to do it from 200 instead of 300 total or whatever. But I actually think that's the main reason. It's just players themselves only want to go through the extra testing and everything if they have a true chance to feel they have the true chance to make the team. It's an imperfect system, though, because you're right. There's always the possibility something like this happens. And, you know, what's it for Sweden? Like, Sweden has what, 80 NHLers?
I don't know the exact number offhand.
I don't think it's much more than that. Like, you almost wonder how he got left off. I mean, it's easy for me to say in hindsight, but, you know, some of those players clearly wouldn't be on Team Sweden. Some of them are fourth liners or what have you, or goaltender that isn't. So it's just an oversight. But, you know, mistakes happen. And yeah. So as far as I know, WHF hasn't made a ruling, but I don't see any grounds by which they could allow him to participate.
Okay, next story I want to get to, which admittedly we didn't really get to touch on earlier this week because we talked as much as we did about the Montreal Canadiens. Sorry, but also not sorry. They were the big story from earlier this week. But the Ottawa Senators right now, and the way that they've been playing, they don't look very good. But remember at the beginning of the year when Pierre Dorion said this was a team that was kind of through with the rebuild? It seemed as if they kind of wanted to win a few more games. That hasn't really happened. And Matt Murray, their goaltender who they signed, what, like a couple off seasons ago, he's in the second year of a four-year, $25 million deal. He gets sent down to the AHL. He has not been playing all that well this year, pretty much ever since he joined the Ottawa Senators. It's not a good time. Losers of six in a row after losing to the Vancouver Canucks, another team who we've talked about on this podcast that's not going through some great times. So what are your thoughts on the Ottawa Senators and how they've gone through this year and Matt Murray being sent down to the AHL?
Well, it's a disaster, right? I mean, you hit the nail on the head in the sense that this is not the plan. This was not by design. This is not how anyone there saw the season going. You know, I think we have to remember, though, too, like, I don't want to be too hard on them because, you know, 10 players were in COVID protocol at one point. And
yes,
I know for a fact that a number of those players had symptoms, like real symptoms. You know, it wasn't just one day of discomfort. And so, you know, I don't know where they're all at individually right now, but, you know, I think that played a role, say, in Vancouver's last season, too. Like, when you have that kind of layoff, like, those guys are in protocol. It's 10 days in isolation. They don't get to skate. Again, they could be dealing with some longer term symptoms and just, you know, whatever they dealt with in that moment. You know, I think that has played a role in their season. I think we have to look at the Islanders the same way, right? You know, it's not just underperformance because no one cares or the team was built poorly. I mean, there's probably elements of that there. You know, I think the Senators' blue line in particular stands out to me that they got to remake that. I mean, they got some really intriguing young forwards and there's a lot of optimism. You know, that's where I feel where the real disappointment hits. Like, I don't think they really thought they were going to be a playoff team. They wanted to be in the mix for the playoffs. And here we are at the start of December. And it's you can't even have that conversation with a straight face. And so, I don't know what comes next. You know, Pierre Dorion was given an extension recently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sense that DJ Smith's on the hot seat. I mean, I guess at some point, I guess every coach is if things don't turn. But it just strikes me as they're kind of still in the rebuild. They thought they were ready to start maybe jogging, if not fully running, and they stumbled. And I think they just got to grit their way through this. The Matt Murray situation, I don't see a resolution. I mean, to me, you're not trading that guy. So you've got to try to rehabilitate him or get him back on his game. You owe him a lot of money the next 2 years. You know, I guess a buyout's always possible in the summertime, but that's a quagmire, that one. And I do think that it goes a little deeper than just the way they conceived of their team. We shouldn't overlook the fact that COVID's going to probably impact their performance as well.
I'm also just curious with Matt Murray. Like, this is a guy who, when he was with the Pittsburgh Penguins, like, he was one of the best young goalies at the time. I was listening to, I was watching Hockey Night over the weekend, and Kelly Rudy was saying when he saw him play in Pittsburgh, he was the best young goalie he'd ever seen, right? And he, ever since he's left Pittsburgh, he's just, maybe not even just as when he's left Pittsburgh, you could even say like near the end of that tenure, he was starting to fall off too. Like, I don't know what's gone on. Like, what's gone on in his life? I think he's had some like personal stuff, I think, with like one of his parents, I think, as well.
Yeah, his father died. Away. You know, I want to tread lightly there. I don't know to what degree that might still be effective or not. You know, I've lost my mom and understand that grief is not a straight line, that, you know, you feel good for a time and then it might hit you like way later. So like, I don't know what he's dealing with his dad's death, but he's had a lot of injuries too. And I think that has impacted his career in a pretty noticeable way. Like, you saw it at the end of his time in Pittsburgh. You know, Ottawa might have bet on the wrong guy. You know, it's just simple. He's had a it's an interesting career. Like, you know, Kelly Rudy can evaluate goalies on a level I can't. Played the position. I can just tell you, hey, if you stopped enough pucks or not at the end of the game, yeah, more or less. But, you know, Matt Murray had like a .940 save percentage in the AHL as like a 21-year-old. And won 2 Stanley Cups immediately as the starter. Like, I know Marc-Andre Fleury carried the ball for some of those playoff runs in 2016 and 17, but he came in and finished the job. And, you know, now his career's hanging by a thread and he's not even 30. So, you know, like, he's younger than Jack Campbell, right? He's got two cups on his name. He's got two cups on his resume right now. You know, I'm not saying we're running him out of the league, but it definitely looks like his spot as an NHL goaltender is in some degree of jeopardy here. And he's younger than Jack Campbell, who's literally just only now establishing himself as a number one. Like, the goaltending is that it doesn't compare to forwards or defensemen. Like, you just don't get that kind of variance. Like, you don't get forwards at age 28 who can all of a sudden just score 40 goals, like, after kind of being third liners or whatever. You know, maybe the closest we saw was Vegas, you know, found a couple of gems like that. Like, William Karlsson had never really scored as an NHL player, then scores 40 in year one and with the Golden Knights. But it's extremely rare at other positions, more normal at goaltending. So I don't know where it goes. You know, I actually got to know Matt a little during those cup years and I'm pulling for him as a guy. But it's good, man. It's tough to find it. It's tough to find a silver lining in this for him. You know, he's got to go to Belleville and get back to being the goalie who can be .940 in the AHL, because, you know, you really get the sense the Senators this isn't a message for 1 week. I don't think. Like, I think this is meant to be a crazy wake up call. And so let's hope he can get healthy and rediscover his game.
I hope so for his sake as well. There's another team which has, as far as I know, they have not necessarily dealt with COVID the same way that the Senators have. And maybe we can go a little harder on them. But the Philadelphia Flyers, that's a team I thought that would be in the conversation for some playoff talk. They are now on a 7-game winless streak. You thought the Senators were going through some tough times. The Flyers are going through some tougher times. And GM Chuck Fletcher addressed the state of his team earlier this week. What do you think the Flyers do with where they're at right now and the way that their team has underperformed to this point in the year?
It's never a good sign when you check your email and a team just randomly says, our GM's available at 12:15 today, which is what happened earlier this week with Chuck Fletcher. And you're like, all right, has someone been fired? Like, did you make a trade? Like, what, you know, and there's sort of no pretense to it. It's just like, you know, it's sort of like what we saw with Mark Bergevin right after 3 or 4 games in the season. He's got to come out sort of a crisis press conference. That was a bit, you know, what Chuck Fletcher was doing. You know, what I took from his words there is he doesn't see any trades. Like, he doesn't see much way that he can impact the roster in terms of shaking things up that way. I mean, they have a lot of veteran players on pretty beefy deals. And so they have to figure it out amongst themselves, or people are getting fired at some point. You know, like, they're in a totally different spot than Ottawa. This isn't a rebuild. This is a team meant to contend. You know, they actually got off to a decent start. I think they were like 6-2-2 after the first 10 games. Carter Hart bounced back from a tough year last year. But what really concerns the Flyers is they're not scoring. Like, they're not getting offense. And, you know, missing Hayes, for example, hurts in that area. But, you know, they have other players that should be more productive. I know James Van Riemsdyk's been struggling. You know, Claude Giroux in the final year of his contract. You know, even older players like that are paid to produce, and the production hasn't been there. And so, They're a team. They're a team to keep a close eye on. I think like this. This has to turn quickly. They're not out of the playoff race by any stretch. I mean, the Metropolitan Division is a bit of a. It's a bit of a bog. There's a lot going on there in that division, and I could see them getting hot and getting back in it. But the time is upon us to do that. I mean, I think that they have to stop the bleeding, and you know, Carter Hart's another guy. I could see him going for Team Canada. I mean, we didn't even get into the goaltending of Team Canada, but. You know, he can maybe make a difference for them and help them win some games if the goals aren't coming by upping his own performance. But there's a lot of hot seats around the league. It's getting pretty hot there, whether it's Michel Therrien Alain Vigneault, pardon me, Michel Therrien's assistant coach and Chuck Fletcher must be feeling it too.
Yeah, but I'm sure that hot seat could still. Michel Therrien, there's no way he's not on some hot seat in Philadelphia. He might be the easiest sacrificial lamb to do at the start before you get to Alain Vigneault and maybe before you get to Chuck Fletcher, right? Or whoever they have on their bench as assistant coaches.
Well, they're all talking about the power play there. You know, one of the reasons they're not scoring, the power play hasn't been good. You know, everyone's looking for an answer. They're going to get a little healthier and they just need their players to play better. I know, like, sometimes we can like look at this from every angle and you know, ultimately it's going to come down to those players or else those players won't be there. You know, like that's how I view it. It's a team that has to show they can do it as constructed or there's going to be changes coming because they're supposed to be good. Right. And remember, let's rewind the clock, you know, pre-pandemic, everything's good. Young CJ, young Julian, we don't even know each other back in these days.
We don't even know each other yet.
You know, when Ron Hextall was fired as a GM in Philadelphia, like he wanted to do it patiently. Like he was trying to do more of a patient rebuild. And that wasn't the only thing that went into his firing at the time. I think that they wanted maybe a more collaborative front office than what they felt he was running to. But, you know, Chuck Fletcher is kind of brought in to make changes and more immediacy and win. And, you know, they had a pretty good run in the Toronto bubble into the 2020 playoffs. And it just hasn't really been there since. And so, you know, it's getting late early in Philly. I'll tell you that much. And as I say, when you see that email this week, like our GM speaking and there's nothing else, it's like, okay, that's just a sign of what's going on behind the scenes, that there's real pressure there to turn around. And if there is the silver lining, I would say, I actually think they have good enough players to do it, but it's a matter of getting the job done.
Let me throw out a name for the Philadelphia Flyers. And you tell me if this is out of base or there's no way for them to do this or not. Jake DeBrusque, who actually just asked out of Boston.
I can't rule it out. You know, it seems like another Metropolitan Division team, maybe the New York Rangers, might have a bit more interest in Jake DeBrusque. I mean, look, there's a fair amount of interest in Jake DeBrusque. He's 25 years old, you know, former top pick, top 15 draft pick, scored in the league, had some success in the playoffs. But, you know, I think the question is an acquisition cost. The other problem too is Boston needs them right now, right? Like as we're recording this, Brad Marchand's out suspended. Basically their entire AHL team is shut down due to a COVID situation in Providence. You know, they need Jake DeBrusque to play. And so I don't get the feeling that this is a trade that's going to come down and like, even though he's asked for the trade and we all know about it publicly and then it gets discussed, that doesn't seem like anything is that imminent. And so, you know, I would expect at a certain point, Don Sweeney will certainly start entertaining those calls, line up who he thinks interested. But I'm not sure he's pulling the trigger before the Christmas break kicks in and, you know, the trade freeze December 18th. And so Jake DeBrusque's got to play now because he's playing for today, but he's playing for tomorrow too. So maybe Philadelphia is the answer, but, you know, Calgary, I could see there. Arizona, I've heard. I mean, look, there's a bunch of teams that are, They got to figure out what it costs, right? And if you're Boston, I don't think you're giving them away for a draft pick. Like, I think you're trying to get back some kind of potentially equal player or someone that you can put into your lineup. And so I don't know the perfect fit there, but I think he's more likely to end up in Manhattan than Philly.
So for people who were able to just, you know, who were really paying attention to CJ's answer when it comes to Jake DeBrusque, if the Bruins are looking to move him, look out for Arizona, the Rangers, potentially the Calgary Flames as well.
It's a longer list than that, too. I just don't know all the teams. Like, Edmonton's another one I wonder about. Like, Jake's from Edmonton.
Yes.
You know, the Oilers have a good thing going. I'm not sure the fit is perfect in the moment. know, the other problem here too is his playing time, right? Like in Boston, as soon as not only when they trade for Taylor Hall, but extend him in the summer, like he's their third line left winger because he's not playing above Taylor Hall and he's not playing ahead of Brad Marchand when Brad's in the lineup. So just by slotting, he's third line left wing, that limits potentially, you know, what the power play cookies he gets. You know, it makes it harder for him to do what he do. Like he's a rush scorer, right? And I see a similar problem in a sense in Edmonton. Like if they were to trade for him in the hypothetical world, like he's probably on their third line when everybody's healthy. And so fit is always plays into this too. Like lots of people can like the player, but the player might not fit exactly where you need him in your lineup. I think it'll be a long list of teams though, at least circling and seeing if that fits there.
Okay. And with that, it is time for stick taps. I have two. At first I thought I had just had the one, but now I think I have two. Okay. I want to get off here. The first one I want to bring up is, we were talking about the Ottawa Senators earlier. Logan Brown used to be a member of the Ottawa Senators. He now finds himself in St. Louis. He made his Blues debut earlier this week and he scored. And I believe he's also a St. Louis native as well. His dad was also in attendance. His dad, Doug, played for the St. Louis Blues once upon a time. So I thought that was a cool moment. And the other stick tap I will give is to everyone who had the Chris Johnston show in their top five podcasts listened to on their Spotify Wrapped. I don't know if you've seen some of the your Instagram stories being flooded with people letting everyone know they have Spotify and they listen to a bunch of music.
Tell me this. Were we at a disadvantage because we only launched in September?
In terms of
making those wrap lists? Like, I don't know how that works because you couldn't listen to us in January, February, March, April, May, June, July.
Here's the thing, right? I don't know if we're necessarily at a disadvantage because I still think we got quite a few people who listened to the show anyway. Right. I saw a lot of people on those lists put up the Steve Dangle podcast near the top, and I think they're just they've been at this for years. So they took them a while to get to the stage that they're at, and they just have the dedicated fan base that they have. Not that we don't, but we absolutely definitely take notice of the Steve Dangle podcast and the fact that they've been number one on a lot of these lists. The Staff and Graph podcast as well has gotten themselves a lot of love too. I don't think we're at a disadvantage at all. I think the more episodes we do, it'll probably help us for next year. But we're not at a disadvantage for that. The fact just that people even want to listen to us every week, whether it's for 30 minutes, an hour, whatever you want to do, that I'm happy about that. Also, the fact that we are on YouTube as well. I think a lot of people genuinely love watching us on YouTube. That also plays a role in this.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to give my stick tap and I didn't prepare properly. But we had a YouTube viewer from Iran who said that, I don't know if it's a he or she, I believe it's a he, that he's listened to every episode.
Murdad, I think, is their name.
Yes, their name. Like, that's cool. And I know I always mention that, but like, it still blows my mind that we can have people like around the world listening to us. And so thank you for your dedication in Iran or wherever else you might be watching or listening to us. That makes me feel great. And what also makes me feel great, Julian, is on Monday next week, I'm going to be sitting with you in Montreal. So anyone watching us can watch one camera and see us. It's not just going to, we don't need two because we're going to be sitting socially distanced, but close enough that we could be on one camera and do this live again. Because that was probably my favorite episode when we were down in Adam's basement. Just, you know, I'm loving everything we're doing, man. But like the energy when you're in the same room is hard to match. And
For sure.
You know, so I'm pumped for that next week. And thanks to everyone who's listening. But stick tack to Iran, because I never in a million years could have put my head around the fact someone in Iran is sitting listening to us talk about hockey from Toronto, Montreal. That's just like, we're living in the future, man. What's going on?
I don't know, man. It blows my mind too. And location TBD for the Monday show, but we are definitely going to make it happen. I don't want to miss out on any opportunity.
Wait a minute. Were you going to like advertise a location? Like, we don't need people randomly showing up or something. Like,
No. I mean, look, maybe one. I mean, I don't know about you, but if it ever gets to a point where we're allowed to have audiences for the CJ show, I would love a live show.
For sure. But I'm not sure Monday needs to be one.
No. And I wasn't trying to make it that. I was more just saying like, okay, like the location scouting. I'm location scouting right now. It's going to happen. And we're going to find a decent spot. But yeah, that's going to do it for the Thursday edition of the Chris Johnston Show. CJ, a pleasure as always to do these episodes with you. And I'm very much looking forward to Monday. I was about to say, I look forward, one, to do these episodes with you, two, any opportunity we get to do episodes in person with each other, I will jump at that opportunity because I too feel that energy when we're in the same room with each other and the comfort level and all that. Like it's a different vibe. It's a totally different vibe. So you got to jump on that whenever we can. And we hope everyone watching and listening, wherever you listen to podcasts, enjoy that vibe too, because we're working hard at it. We're 21 episodes deep, and we're not at Steve Dangle podcast numbers yet, but, and I mean in terms of the episodes they recorded, but we're on the way there. We're doing okay. And also Agent Provocateur, which, by the way, really great episode earlier this week with Max Pacioretty. You should check that out if you can. And the SDPN's going to have more stuff coming. 2022 is looking like a real big year for the SDPN. You better get on the train right now.
Before maybe the SDPN is the real.
Oh, the juggernaut. Maybe the. Maybe. I don't know how I feel about the.
I didn't use the word. You're the one who said it. It wasn't me.
Okay. All right.
I'm just wearing it on a t-shirt. I'm just a guy wearing a t-shirt, bud.
Let me just end the episode here before I get myself in trouble. Subscribe to the SDPN YouTube page. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Check out all the other great SDPN content. Go on their SDPN store and buy some of our merch as well. The Coburg sweater, my face on some laptop stickers. We got a bunch of great stuff there. And we'll be back on Monday with another episode. You could start getting in your questions for Ask CJ for Monday, because we're going to definitely do a lot of those for our Monday edition. For CJ, I'm Julian, saying so long and peace.
Have a great weekend.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie @JKA McKenzie.